We are joined right now by a writer for SI, football writer for Sports Illustrated, somebody I consider a very good friend of the program, and the best player with a rat tail at the Art Monk football camp for five straight years. Robert Klemko is my guest. Robert, good morning. What's up? How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Dude, I'm great. And I'll talk to you about that part a little bit later on. But the biggest story in the last 24 hours has been Le'Veon Bell not reporting yesterday and how his teammates responded. What was your reaction when you saw some of the comments from his teammates?
You know, it was very odd. And I think you got the sense of that when you saw the rest of these NFL players on Twitter almost unanimously saying that something was wrong there and that you never talk about another man's money. And that's something that you hear a lot in NFL locker rooms when guys are holding out. And I know that they may have a different culture around holdouts in Pittsburgh. They're very rare there over the last couple decades. I remember it was a big deal when Hines Ward held out in 2005 when he was trying to become the highest paid receiver. But still, you know, to see NFL players slamming another NFL player who's trying to get paid is an odd thing. And it leads you to believe that there's much more to that story. Either Le'Veon Bell in other ways has rubbed teammates the wrong way, and or it's possible that these players have been given the impression that Bell would be back yesterday or the day before, either by Bell or by coaches and management. But just to see everybody on one day deciding this is the day we're going to slam this guy makes me think there's a lot more to that story.
Robert Klemko joining us. Very well said. If you had to speculate, can you fairly speculate? What do you think it is?
You know, I think it's a combination of both of those things. You know, when Antonio Brown was trying to get paid, when Ben Roethlisberger was trying to get paid, and those guys were talking about holdouts, you didn't see any of this. To be fair, neither of them took it as far, and management didn't take it as far with those players as they have taken it with Bell. And you think of the Steelers, and you think of this big three, Antonio Brown, Ben Roethlisberger, and Le'Veon Bell. But I think the Steelers look at it a lot differently. I think they see a running back and hold that position in far less value than they do a quarterback or a wide receiver who they feel can play and be effective for a longer period of time. But I think that Le'Veon Bell and some of his actions has to have rubbed teammates the wrong way. And I think there was an expectation that he would at least return this week.
So how do you think that plays out? When do you think he does come in?
Well, now that he hasn't shown up for the week before the game, you know, I think he's willing to take it the whole way and show up at the end of the season for a playoff run with the intention of playing for another team next year. I think he's honestly trying to save his legs before he gets a new contract. And I think it's possible the Steelers look back on this in 3 months and with a fresh Le'Veon Bell in a soft AFC North division and say that we're glad he's fresh.
Robert Klemko joining us, football writer for Sports Illustrated. This is going to be really interesting to see how that plays out. All right, so moving on to something else. You've got a great piece up right now on SI.com and MMQB about John Elway and where he is in his life right now. Before we get into the details of his search for a quarterback, what is your sense about Elway? I mean, is he happy right now as a person? Is he satisfied? Where's his head at?
Yeah, it was cool to talk to him, but not just him. His oldest son, well, his only son, who was the former high school quarterback and went to Arizona State to play football and dropped out. And we get into the reasons for all that, but it was great to hear about some personal changes John's made in his life, having grandkids, the humbling that comes with the last two seasons being flushed down the drain, being one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time and not being able to draft a franchise quarterback in a couple of big tries, big swings at it. So, you know, I think he's as competitive as he ever was. I think it pains him to not be able to identify that franchise quarterback. But I think in his personal life, he's a really happy guy.
You know, I'm going to talk to you about the personal life in a minute, and I want to ask you about his son. But when he comes in as a team executive and he has almost immediate success, for a while there, it seemed like this guy could do absolutely no wrong. Then what changed?
Yeah, you know, he goes out, and that 2014 defensive free agent class was one for the history books. I mean, you bring in DeMarcus Lawrence, T.J. Ward at his most effective, Aqib Talib at his most effective, and then you pair that with Peyton Manning, and it didn't even matter that Peyton Manning's skills were in such decline. That defense was just historically good. Better, I would argue, than any defense the Seahawks put out in the last decade. And he looks like he can do no wrong. And then Manning retires, and then you start to realize that some of these draft picks and draft choices that he's made, the vast majority of them really haven't worked out at all. And he talked about a change in philosophy there, because when he lost Peyton Manning, when Peyton Manning retired, he felt like the locker room was itching to go back to the playoffs for John to find the next big quarterback to take them to on a Super Bowl run. And when that didn't happen, the locker room was lacking in leaders, especially after DeMarcus Ware retired. And there were guys that lost hope in the season, in games, because of the quarterback situation. So he did two things. He went out and found a quarterback in Case Keenum, a guy that he tried to trade for in 2015 but was unable to do. And he started drafting players just recently, this year, guys that wouldn't lose hope, team captains. I mean, Courtland Sutton, the wide receiver everyone's raving about in Denver, who looks like he's going to be a serious red zone threat, was a three-time captain at Southern Methodist. I don't even know how you do that.
So in the meantime, he's still looking for that quarterback, right? And we can talk about whether or not Case Keenum is that guy or a stopgap guy. But we're talking about one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time who's having trouble finding quarterbacks. Now let me ask you this. Elway's friend John Lynch told you that in his role with the 49ers, there is one position that he cannot scout, safeties, his old position. Why is that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think a lot of guys that played, and John Lynch and Elway are included, and they both admit this, scout the opposite side of the ball better. Because John Elway can look at a cornerback and say, I remember what great cornerbacks did that was frustrating and difficult to play against. And John Lynch can look at a wide receiver and say, I remember all the nuances and specifics about great wide receivers. Because they studied those players more than they studied players on their own side of the ball. And I think the other aspect is that they hold the position to such a high standard that it's sometimes hard for them to evaluate players who don't understand or see the game the way that they did. And I think that you see that with Elway. And one of the things his friend and honestly one of his loudest critics, Mark Schlereth, has said and told me for the story is that when John looks at a quarterback prospect, he sees the arm, he sees the size, he sees the ability, and he says, I can coach that kid up. I've got Gary Kubiak here with me. I've got some great quarterbacking minds at my disposal, and we can coach good football habits and good football into this player. And it's just not something that you can regularly do. You know, one of the cool things I learned in the story was that his dad, the week before he died, put his stamp of approval on Drew Brees and wanted the Broncos to draft Drew Brees in the first round, and I think in the year 2000 or 2001, whichever year Drew came out. But the Broncos already had Brian Greasy, so they went another way.
Robert Klemko joining us. That's a great note, actually. So his dad, what did he like about Drew Brees at that time, and why was he pushing so hard for Brees?
So his dad had been a former colleague of Joe Tiller, who was a coach at Purdue while Brees was there. And Joe Tiller, you know, admitted that Brees didn't have the arm, didn't necessarily have the size, had a little bit of mobility, but nothing to rave about. But he said that this guy led men. He had a great understanding of the game, and he was an incredible locker room presence. And that's what sold his dad. Now, you look at the guys that John has drafted, 15, 14, 13 years later, and those aren't guys that you would say were great locker room presence or had incredible work ethic or led guys, but they had the ability. And I think that in bringing in Case Keenum, part of that is a concession to his dad's way of thinking. And also a nod to Gary Kubiak, who coached Keenum in Houston and had to have been a big influence in him signing and the Broncos offering him in Denver.
All right, so Keenum, does he have his guy now in Keenum, or is that a stopgap, and does the search still continue?
Well, the convenient thing about Keenum for Denver is that he was able to he was willing to sign what's essentially a two-year prove-it deal, where there's no real long-term commitment to him. And even if they cut him after just one season, there's not a huge loss, not a huge hit in dead cap money. So I think that they're prepared for him to be a stopgap quarterback. I think that if he does anything short of take them to the playoffs next year, they'll be looking at a quarterback in the first round. There's a lot more optimism this time of year in Denver, among the players, really, and the coaches as well, because of the way that Keenum has handled himself in practice and so clearly shown that he's the number one quarterback here, where that hasn't happened the last couple of years. So there's optimism, but I think they're prepared for him to just be a stopgap guy.
Robert Klemko joins us for a few more moments, and then you mentioned his personal life. How about that dynamic between John Elway and his son, Jack? Jack, of course, was a scholarship quarterback at Arizona State after a redshirt season. He decided to stop playing football altogether. So how would you describe the relationship between John and his son when Jack decided to stop playing?
Yeah, it was interesting talking to Jack because he's the only son, and he kind of wished he had a brother to shoulder those expectations. And he wanted to just be a regular guy. And meanwhile, John is thinking, hey, he's going to play 4 years of college football. I'm going to road trip with all my buddies to games. He's going to have this great brotherhood. And then Jack, without consulting him at all, calls him up the day he's about to go quit Arizona State football and says, sorry, Dad, I'm quitting. And it created a lot of distance between them for a number of years. And it's a distance that's closed here recently as John has mellowed.
Robert Klemko, my guest. Let me quickly ask you this. If you look at Elway's search for a quarterback and what it might reveal about him, we talked about that at length. What does it say about John Gruden and the way he handled the Khalil Mack situation?
Yeah, you know, it's a fascinating division right now, isn't it? The AFC West.
Definitely.
I think that Gruden feels like he wants to commit money to the offensive side of the ball, and he knows he can win on defense without having a big high-paid player on that side of the ball. I think that he probably laments losing Mac as a locker room presence, and he knows he's going to take a hit in that locker room, especially if they don't succeed in any way this season. But I think he's going to prioritize other positions, and he didn't want to make a big long-term commitment before he ever got to coach another game in the NFL.
Listen, Robert, you've accomplished an enormous amount in your career, but you tweeted out a pic recently that might be your greatest accomplishment ever. I'm talking about that rat tail, that majestic rat tail. How old were you? How long did you grow that thing? And how much respect did your peers have for it?
I think I was 10 years old when that picture was taken. I had a lot of hang time on that rat tail. I didn't love it, but when kids started making fun of me for it, I just kept it around kind of out of spite. And eventually I cut it off, I think, in seventh grade, which I'm very thankful for that decision.
All right, so where is it? I mean, is your mom or your grandmom, does somebody have it in a scrapbook? Do you still have it? What happened to that?
I think my mom has it in a cigar box or something in my house. I really don't want to see it all these years later.
Yeah, everybody should, though. Check it out. Again, the best player with a rat tail at the Art Monk football camp for five straight years, a football writer for SI and a very good friend of the program, Robert Klemko. Robert, great to have you on. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jim.
I think it's majestic, my man. I think you should be proud of that. That rat tail is awesome. Check out his Twitter feed. He's got it up there. Do it, Alvin.